Imagine, just for a second, that you could, well, you could flip this biological switch in your brain that instantly turns everyday annoyances into hidden treasures.
Oh, that sounds like a superpower.
Right. Like you'd literally see opportunities that are completely invisible to everyone else around you.
Just walking right past them.
Exactly. And today, we're actually figuring out how to flip that exact switch. We're using a deep dive into Jack Spirko's framework from his book, Laws of Life, Book 2. Now build the system for your life.
And we are specifically looking at chapter 15 today, right? The one on how setting goals makes education inevitable.
You got it. And, as a practical learning strategist, my day-to-day work is taking lofty ideas like this and, frankly, forcing them into reality. I help students and adults turn goals into directed observation and measurable skill building.
And stepping in from the behavioral system side, my focus is the actual machinery behind that switch. I mean, we're looking at how your attention, your daily habits, and your physical environment reshape the neural pathways that determine what you actually notice.
Which is so fascinating.
It really is. By putting our lenses together for this deep dive, we're going to explore the mechanics of how setting a specific goal literally rewrites your brain's operating code.
So the best way to map out this core law that setting goals makes the inevitable educational is this really tangible story from the source material.
Oh, the nettle story. I love this one.
It's so good. So a woman decides to test this concept by setting a highly specific goal. She wanted to identify useful wild plants growing right near her home.
Her criteria were super strict,
Right.
right?
Yeah, exactly. The plants had to be edible, medicinal, or useful for building things.
Which is key. Notice that she didn't just say, I want to learn about nature. She programmed a really specific filter into her mind.
Right. So a few weeks later, she's working in her garden and she spots a weed she doesn't recognize. She grabs it, totally intending to just rip it out, and bam, her hands immediately break out in this agonizing, burning rash.
Oh man, and the default human reaction there is to like grab the heavy duty herbicide and nuke the entire patch.
Yeah, she actually even put on thick gloves to go do exactly that.
But, and this is the turning point, her biological programming interrupted that default reaction. The goal she set acted as a call to action.
It forced her to pause.
Exactly. It forced her to examine the nuisance instead of just destroying it. She researches the weed and identifies it as Urtica dioica, which is widely known as stinging nettle.
And the chemistry of that encounter is wild. Like, stinging nettle hairs act like microscopic hypodermic needles.
Yikes.
Yeah, they inject this cocktail of histamine, acetylcholine, serotonin, and formic acid into your skin. The histamine is what causes that aggressive burning sensation.
But in her research, because she was forced to look it up, she discovers a critical vulnerability in the plant's defense. Boiling the nettle almost instantly neutralizes that entire chemical cocktail.
It's amazing. I mean, my favorite part of this is that the stinging nettle didn't change its biological makeup. It was always a potential resource.
Right. What shifted was her internal processing. Because she boiled it, the plant transformed from a painful liability into this nutritional powerhouse.
And it hits every single metric of her original goal, edible. It's a delicious, mineral-rich tonic. It's packed with iron, calcium, magnesium, silica.
And medicinal, too.
Yeah. Historically, it's brewed into teas for inflammation, joint pain, seasonal allergies, and the seeds even act as a mild stimulant.
And what about the building part?
Well, the fibers have been used for centuries to make cordage and durable cloth. Spirko even points out that front yard gardeners in his community would dig up stinging nettles from the woods and plant them as a security perimeter to stop vegetable thieves.
That is brilliant.
It really is. It's like her goal acted as a software update for her visual cortex, recategorizing a literal threat into a multi-use asset.
And that software update concept maps so perfectly onto a broader psychological framework. Spirko brings up Richard Bach's book, Illusions. The core premise there is this idea of reality bubbles.
Okay, tell me more about that.
So even with billions of people sharing the planet, we are not living in the same world. We are independent processing nodes, and we render reality entirely differently based on our internal code.
Spirko illustrates this with a really great example. Two people waking up early to watch a sunrise at a conference. They are standing shoulder to shoulder, looking at the exact same star.
But the worlds they're experiencing do not overlap at all.
Exactly. The person on the left might be processing the sunrise through this filter of childhood nostalgia. triggering deep emotional memories.
While the person on the right is, well, they're not having those memories at all.
Right.
And you also have to factor in pure physiological hardware differences. Spirko actually notes he is legally blind in one eye.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so his physical field of view, his depth perception, his light intake, they are structurally distinct from someone with perfect binocular vision.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Add in the fact that our retinas process reds, oranges, and pinks in slightly different shades, and the sunrise itself is in constant motion. The statistical probability of two people looking at the exact same coordinate, processing the identical color frequency with the same emotional resonance is practically zero.
So we are standing side by side, but we are sealed inside separate reality bubbles.
Exactly. And understanding that reality is a localized internal rendering allows us to scientifically explain phenomena that pop culture frequently mistakes for magic.
Okay, so I buy the biology of the reality bubble, but help me understand the industry around this. I mean, if altering our reality is just a matter of internal perception and pattern recognition, why is there a $1 billion self-help industry telling people they need to manifest their desires by, like, sending vibrations to the universe?
Yeah. Well, the science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke famously said that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. The human brain is a supercomputer. It's processing hundreds of thousands of data points per second. Smells, micro expressions, peripheral movement, mostly below our conscious awareness.
So we don't even realize we're doing it.
Exactly. People mistake their own advanced biological scanning technology for magic because they simply don't understand the neuroscience of their subconscious. It is far easier and, frankly, far more profitable for a guru to sell a mystical secret than to teach neuroplasticity.
And if the magic fails, the guru can just claim you lacked faith, setting up the sale for the next seminar.
Bingo. So let's strip the mysticism out of the classic law of attraction trope, like manifesting a prime parking spot at a crowded store.
Oh, I hear this one all the time. The woo-woo explanation implies some sort of Jedi mind trick, like you're projecting a frequency that overrides the free will of a stranger and forces them to leave Home Depot just as you arrive.
Which is ridiculous. If human beings possessed telepathic control over others, we wouldn't use it to park closer to the garden center. We would use it to compel billionaires to sign over their fortunes.
Fair point. But the statistical anomaly remains, right? People who visualize a parking spot often experience a massive jump in success, going from finding a good spot 50% of the time to maybe 85% of the time.
The results are very real, but the mechanism is purely biological. When you set a firm goal to find a great spot, you write a temporary line of mental code. It instructs your subconscious to scan for any data that facilitates that goal.
So what does that look like in the parking lot?
As you pull into the crowded lot, your conscious mind is just looking at brake lights, but your subconscious is processing your peripheral vision. It detects a shopper exiting the store, analyzes their walking cadence, and registers that they are walking purposefully with keys in hand.
So without you consciously doing the math, your brain recognizes the pattern, predicts the trajectory, and nudges your hands to turn down a specific aisle.
Yep. You round the corner just as the reverse lights turn on. It feels like a mystical manifestation, but it's just your hardware executing the mental code.
We see the limitations of physical hardware versus mental code perfectly in the Sanibel Island shelling story from the book.
Oh, right. Spirko grew up on Florida beaches, didn't he?
He did. His mental database was already programmed to spot high-value shells, things like whelks, shark-eye moons, banded tulips, and fighting conch.
But his wife and son did not have this programming.
Not at all. On their first walk, he was pulling treasures out of the sand while they found nothing but broken fragments.
Because they were just looking for whole shells sitting clearly on the surface.
Right. But a trained eye knows that a fighting conch hides under common shells, revealing only a sharp point. Or a banded tulip might just be a tiny geometric pattern barely poking through the wet sand.
So what did he do?
He stopped collecting and started pointing out the micro patterns. He basically installed the mental code into their reality bubbles.
And because they didn't share his visual limitation, being legally blind in one eye, their superior optical hardware, combined with that new mental code, completely outproduced his lifetime of experience within 2 days.
That pattern recognition filter governs our daily lives. I mean, millions of Americans have a subconscious filter for the numbers 9211, noticing it on digital clocks instantly.
Or gun enthusiasts constantly spotting numbers that match calibers like 223, 308, 357.
Or when you buy a specific dark blue car and the next day you assume the entire city went out and bought the exact same model. just because you see it everywhere.
Oh, totally. Or someone starts woodworking and suddenly they are spotting perfectly good scrap wood and discarded pallets in ditches along their entire commute.
And the news media manipulates this exact mechanism.
Right, instantly. If a terrifying report airs about a new virus with flu-like symptoms, your brain activates a threat detection code. The next day at the grocery store, you notice every single person who clears their throat or sneezes.
Even though the coughing people, the scrap wood, the blue cars, they were always there.
Exactly. Your brain just aggressively filtered them out to conserve processing power until a goal or a perceived threat made them relevant.
Spotting a blue car or a parking spot is a neat party trick. But the real leverage comes when you apply this exact same neurological filter to abstract ideas. In the framework, this is called the entrepreneur's lens.
It's a fundamental shift in processing reality. The average person encounters a friction point or a problem and registers it as an annoyance that someone else should fix.
But the entrepreneur encounters the exact same friction point and their brain immediately registers it as an opportunity.
Right. They begin running subconscious mental models. Like, is this problem scalable? What is the cost of solving it? Is the potential return actually worth the sacrifice required?
They are actively fine-tuning their reality bubble to extract value from friction. And when you run that mental code consistently over a lifetime, the results compound.
Bless.
Spirko argues that knowledge compounds using the exact same mathematical principles as money.
The parallels to investing are striking, really. Wealth building relies heavily on dollar cost averaging, making consistent, systematic investments regardless of market conditions, and the mathematical reality of compound interest.
Right, where the growth curve goes parabolic in years 30 to 35 compared to years 5 to 10.
Because the interest is generating its own interest, knowledge follows the same curve. Every new concept you grasp acts as a foundational hook, making it exponentially easier to attach and integrate the next complex concept.
But, you know, a lot of adults write off their ability to learn quickly. They just blame it on age. They point to kids as these biological learning machines.
And they usually cite synaptogenesis, which is the rapid formation of synapses in the brain.
Right, which is a real thing.
It is biologically true that children create new neural connections at an astonishing rate, but blaming a lack of learning strictly on age is an excuse. The driving force behind a child's rapid neural development isn't just youth, it is relentless, unrestricted curiosity.
They're constantly probing the boundaries of their reality bubble.
Exactly. Adults who consciously maintain that level of aggressive curiosity and remain constant students force their brains to continue forming new synapses.
And that active curiosity fuels a specific methodology Spirko calls logic-led learning. The formula he uses is A plus B minus C equals question mark.
A plus B minus C equals.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the ability to use established knowledge to deduce an unknown variable without waiting for an authority figure to hand you the answer.
To see how that plays out in the real world, imagine you are a gardener. You know a specific type of weed only thrives in highly alkaline soil. That's fact A.
Okay.
You walk onto a new piece of land and see a massive field of that exact weed thriving. That's fact B.
Got it.
You also know that blueberries require highly acidic soil to survive. That's fact C.
So without even testing the soil and without anyone telling you, you deduce fact D. Planting a commercial blueberry crop in this field will be an expensive disaster.
Precisely. You just saved thousands of dollars and months of labor through pure deduction. You aren't just memorizing a static database, you are actually upgrading your mental processor.
People who consistently apply logic-led learning appear to have exceptionally high IQs. But it's just because they can see the logical outcome of a scenario miles before anyone else.
But because our brain scanning code is so efficient at compounding data and seeking out outcomes, we have to be ruthlessly protective of what we program into it.
Right. We can't feed the computer garbage.
Exactly. One of the most common programming errors is relying on negative mental commands.
Negative commands are fundamentally weak because the brain struggles to process a void. Like, if you aggressively tell yourself, do not think about a pink elephant, what happens?
Your brain must first construct the image of the pink elephant in order to know what it's supposed to be avoiding.
Exactly. The same applies to habits. Don't eat junk food.
No.
Just keeps your brain hyper-focused on junk food. You have to use positive replacement commands.
Spirko compares this to weed control in agriculture. The most sustainable way to eliminate weeds isn't just pouring them out. It's planting a cover crop so dense and vibrant that the weeds have absolutely no physical space to take root.
You overwhelm the negative by aggressively cultivating the positive.
And cultivating that positive environment requires layered, proactive goals. Vague aspirations are dangerous because they just generate mental noise.
Yeah, a goal like, I want to start a business, provides zero actionable code for the brain's scanning function.
The brain needs parameters. Spirko spent a decade filtering the layers of his own business model before launching it. He defined the parameters: high profit margins, zero employees, and a day-to-day focus on teaching and problem solving.
Defining those layers is where the classic SMART goal framework becomes necessary.
A lot of people treat SMART goals like a corporate buzzword, but it is a vital programming language for the brain.
Let's break that down. Specific.
Right. Outlining the exact physical outcome.
Measurable.
So your brain has data to prove it is succeeding.
Achievable.
Stretching your limits without triggering the brain's fail-safe for impossible tasks.
Relevant.
To a larger overarching architecture of your life, preventing you from getting lost in busy work.
And finally, time-bound.
Creating a hard deadline that forces the subconscious to prioritize the scanning code above trivial distractions.
To see the sheer power of this framework in action, consider the story in the book about the farmer selling eggs.
Okay, set the scene.
If he views himself simply as someone who sells eggs to local customers, his brain scans only for egg-related data. He has a functional but limited side hustle.
But if he applies the SMART framework and programs a layered goal to build a robust, comprehensive local food ecosystem, his processing entirely shifts.
Right. He realizes the eggs are not the primary product. They are a loss leader.
The eggs are simply the mechanism to acquire the exact demographic that buys high-quality local food.
The farmer didn't magically conjure baby greens or mushrooms out of thin air. The SMART goal just told his mental radar what to ping.
The opportunities were always bouncing around his farm. He just finally turned the receiver on.
So he starts cultivating mushrooms and baby greens to sell to those exact same egg customers.
And his customers inevitably ask about local honey. He doesn't want the labor of managing bees himself, but his radar pings again.
He spots a local beekeeper who has a great product but zero marketing reach. He forms a partnership, buys the honey wholesale, and offers it to his customer base.
He stacked his offerings. By fulfilling the layered goal, his average revenue per user, his ARPU, completely explodes.
The side hustle transforms into a highly profitable full-time business, all because he changed the parameters of what his brain was permitted to look for.
To help you install those parameters into your own reality bubble today, Spirko provides a highly actionable framework known as the Lenns formula. That's L-E-N-S.
Let's walk through it. The L stands for label the real goal. This demands a single plain sentence that describes a tangible, real-world outcome.
Right. If you are describing a feeling or an emotional state, you aren't setting a goal. You are just trying to manage a mood.
The E is extract the layers. A primary goal is just a compass heading. The layers are the specific skills, the daily habits, the required capital, and the relationships you need to build to get there.
The goal points the way, but extracting the layers is where the actual education takes place.
The N is name the signals. You need to identify the early, subtle indicators that prove your attention is tuned correctly.
These aren't the final victory metrics. They are the breadcrumbs. They prove you are picking up valid signals instead of just reacting to random noise.
And the S is set the next action. This is the kill switch for procrastination. You must choose one highly specific action to execute within the next 24 to 72 hours that directly engages one of the extracted layers.
It forces physical movement and shatters the illusion that daydreaming is the same thing as planning.
Distilling Law 15 down to its foundational elements gives us a stark view of reality. Goals are ultimately just filters.
Setting a goal does not manifest new matter into the universe. You simply recognize the resources that were always sitting in your blind spot.
Once that lens is correctly calibrated, the education required to achieve the goal becomes entirely inevitable. Vague goals produce noise and anxiety, but clear, layered goals produce insight and massive leverage.
You don't need mystical faith, and you certainly don't need fleeting motivation. You need clarity, directed attention, and follow through.
To help rewrite your internal operating system, Spirko gives us three specific commands to program into our mental computer. And I am going to read these three mental code rewrite lines exactly as written in the chapter.
Go for it.
Line one, computer, when I set a goal, scan for any and all opportunities to accomplish it.
Love that.
Line two, computer, alert me when I am subconsciously writing code so I can make sure it is clean code.
So important.
And line three, Computer daily learning compounds the growth of knowledge. Find me something new to learn.
If you run that code daily, the structure of the world will fundamentally shift around you.
So let's run a quick diagnostic on your hardware right now. Look around the room you're sitting in. What is your mental radar pinging for?
Is it locked onto the annoyances? The clutter on the desk? The task you don't want to do?
Or is your receiver tuned for growth, scanning for the exact opportunity that fulfills the next layer of your goal?
The reality bubble you exist in is highly malleable. It is entirely up to you what frequency you choose to tune into.
Here's a final thought to mull over today. The reality bubble you wake up in tomorrow will look fundamentally structurally different from the one you are sitting in right now, simply by consciously deciding what you want to look for before you go to sleep tonight.
And if you want to dive deeper into these mechanics or explore the rest of the frameworks we talked about, you can find more resources at jackslaws.com.
There is a massive amount of leverage to be found in this system. Check it all out at jackslaws.com. Until next time, keep your code clean and your eyes open.